Hello, and welcome to another episode of the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. I'm your host, John Collins, the author and founder of William Branham Historical Research at william-branham.org, and with me I have my very special guest, Bruce Haying, former member of Calvary Chapel and close friend of John Wimber. Bruce, it's good to have you back on and to talk about all things music. You and I have chatted a little bit offline, so you know some of this, but you don't know the extent. I was leaving the cult at 37 years old, having been told that the only kind of music that I could listen to was the 1950s style quartet music. And even the modern music, the stuff we're going to talk about today, John Wimber's music, that was taboo in our particular sect of the Pentecostal faith. In fact, I knew I had friends that would listen to the modern music, and I would hear sermons preached against them for doing it. So it was quite an unusual journey. But at the same time, we had all the elements of a destructive cult. I did they call it chanting. I know in the cult you perceive it as different, but when you're in the mall, when you're in a restaurant and they're playing music that everybody else thinks is old-timey, old-fashioned, soothing music, to us, the old-fashioned music was rock and roll, and that rock and roll was evil. So in my head, I would chant and block it. So whenever I left this group at age 37, it was the year 2012, I had never really heard rock and roll. I had successfully blocked it. I had been in places where they played it, but mentally, I never heard it. So I started on this journey, this musical journey, that I'm going to share some today. I don't think I've shared as much as I'm going to today in previous podcasts, but I started from scratch. I didn't know anything. And I found this one website that had this crazy collection, and I literally started at 1940, and I said, give me the top songs of 1940 of all genres, 1941, 1942. And I did this for the better part of a year. You'll never understand my surprise when I heard the Birds, "To Everything, Turn, Turn, Turn." When I heard that song, and it's right out of Ecclesiastes, I thought, what in the world were we blocking this good music for? This is good music. And what's really interesting, and as it relates to the conversation you and I are having, that song by the Birds predates the Jesus movement by,
I think
5 years, something like that, right?
Yeah.
So music as an industry was shaping what would become the Jesus movement, and not many people realize that because of the names involved with the Jesus movement, but the music was shifting towards a more religious plane, and there's a lot of reasons for that, which I don't know if we'll get into that in the podcast, but needless to say, the invention of the style of music that was coming to be in the Jesus movement, it actually didn't come from the people who we think and we credit for having shifted the music. So let's talk through music culture.
I'd love to. This is right up my alley. And I have spent, you know, for those of you that are perhaps hearing me on here the first time, I am a piano tuner who has done it for 50 years, and I can do it in my sleep. So what I've spent years doing is sitting on pianos, tuning pianos, thinking about music and culture and what's happened. And so this is completely up my alley, and especially when it comes in regards to Vineyard and John Wimber. A reminder for those that may not have heard any of the other podcasts, John was my dad's best friend. He's buried at the foot of my father. I loved John and was frustrated by John all at the same time. And so in this podcast, you will probably, if you're someone that thinks John Wimber was wonderful, there will be parts of this podcast you probably won't like. And if you're someone that thinks John Wimber was evil and the devil, there's going to be parts of this podcast you don't like. I'll probably anger everyone here, John. But we can go back into the music. And to tell you the truth, I really think a great place to start is you can go back to the Reformation with Luther and how church music started. And Luther wrote some just tremendous hymns. And then, you know, by the time Luther dies, we have John Wesley and Charles Wesley. And of course, the hymnologist of the church was Charles. I think they say he wrote somewhere between 6,500 and 9,000 hymns, Charles Wesley. He is just the church is replete with Charles Wesley hymns, and they were tremendous. And to tell you the truth, they kept the church together. This hymnology kept the church together for years. So much of life depends on when you're born. And I'm old enough to be your dad. I'm 70, almost 72. So much of life depends on when you were born. And this period of time that I was born, I saw this evolution of music. And Wimber was involved in this transition. And so we can head down this road, and I can talk a lot about what happened as I saw the transition of music to go from the unity that was happening in the 50s and then in the early 60s, and then something happened in the 60s. And we can talk about that, and you already alluded to it a little bit with your talk about music.
Well, to be fair, I'm going to anger everybody as well.
Okay.
You've been disconnected from this movement for a while, but the movement shifted in a really weird way where it was more popular to condemn people than it was to help uplift and encourage people. And I say this openly because no matter what church I go to, even after leaving the cultish environment that I left, I find people who will be even out on the streets and just rebuke somebody for no apparent reason. Or what's more common is they'll see something that it doesn't sit right with what their personal convictions are, and they'll go just talk about whoever did whatever it was that they did until it turns into a group of just condemning people for the sake of condemning them. I'll say it like that. And that's actually entered the denominational world, not just the non-denominational world. So when I left Branhamism and I tried to enter into some of the Protestant denominations and even some that aren't denominational, I had this real trouble everywhere I went because I could pick up on the destructive nature that had crept in. And I can truly say it crept in because of Branhamism and some of the things that we're talking about today. Not all, but some of them. To the extent that we served an inferior God. And I'm saying that, I know I'm going to anger people, but there are people who think that all music that is not Christian is inspired by Satan. And they'll, you've probably seen it, they'll paint these pictures in your mind of like the band Kiss. They'll say that's Knights in Satan's Service. That's
right.
Exactly what that is. Because they've come up with a catchy acronym that makes people convinced that that's why they did it. I know the history of the band Kiss, and no, that's not at all why they did
it. Right.
And the band had a name before this. And if you don't know that history, go watch a few documentaries. It's kind of an
Alice Cooper
history.
Alice Cooper would be another one that everyone thought. And he actually happened to be a man devoted to God, believe it or not.
Absolutely. So we had this inferior God that we believed could only act within the group that was righteous. In other words, if you were unrighteous, God couldn't persuade you to come to him. You had to come to him through the mediator. And we had elected who the mediators are. These are these apostles and prophets, etc. And through the music helped me realize how wrong that was, because I started listening to music like no man's business. I can't tell you how much music I listened to in 2012.
Oh, that's
one
great.
One of them, I could go straight down the line. I don't think this podcast could contain it if I just fully opened up, but what's a good song? All Along the Watchtower. Beautiful song.
Dave Mason, he just passed away.
Yes. Yeah. If you've never heard this, think the book of Revelation. Think about all of the theme. Think of Isaiah. I think even some scholars or some historians have tried to tie that song to Isaiah 21, if I remember correctly.
Right.
But basically, it's talking about a watchtower and a watchman, all of the themes of the Bible, like the judgment and fall of Babylon, etc. You can walk straight through the song and you can see the imagery that is in the Bible. And granted, this is not written at all to a religious audience, not by any means, but it's the inspiration. So I began to realize that God gives the inspiration. How we use it and how we apply it, that's on us. But how can you say that inspiration comes from something else? If you do that, you're basically making Satan the creator and not God. And I can truly tell you that this song, All Along the Watchtower, that's beautiful music. That's one of my favorites. And yeah. It's just one in this long line of songs that when I began to hear it, I started to hear things that, for me, it carried a deeper spiritual meaning. That song was, if I remember correctly, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong, I think it was like 1967. So it's just right before the Jesus movement started to form. This was happening all across the music industry.
Yeah. My connection in the church was started out musically with the hymnology of the church. I have a saying, and I actually believe this, that if you lost the Bible, there's enough good doctrine in a hymnal to get you through. Now, something shifted in the 60s. And for anyone that may be wondering, where are we going with this? Is music good? Is music bad? Music's been the center of my life. It's not that the church music that we see today is not good. There's a lot of great stuff. Sometimes what's happened is the emotionalism, and as we shift more towards Vineyard, you can see that it's what it kind of replaced. The emotionalism of music, and John, you can see John Collins talking about it, the emotions that it stirs in John. And this emotion that you just saw in John is what stirred all of us in the late 70s at Vineyard. But let me go back. 1961, America is changing, okay? JFK is president. John Wimber is 26 years old. And he and a friend of his named Mike Patterson get two guys together who they thought could sing and could sing pretty good. And these two guys, their name was Bobby Hatfield and Bill Medley. And John Wimber, at 26 years old, forms the Righteous Brothers. Okay? And I don't know, John, if you're very aware of the Righteous Brothers' music. You probably are. But you look on those albums say arranged and conducted by Johnny Wimber. Okay? And so what happens is at 26 years old, John is at his peak in the music business. Saxophone was his number one instrument, but he could do it all. And he was in Vegas every week making more money than he ever thought possible. He had a wife, he had four kids. His personal life was an absolute mess, okay? He was hardly a Christian. He was drinking too much. He was doing drugs, but musically, he's at the top of his game. Okay, he's part of this whole culture. And I tell you, something happened to him when my father and mother invited he and Carol to their home and they became Christians. And for those of you that don't like John Wimber, you're not going to like what I am going to say. If those of you that love John Wimber, you'll like this. John did something that I don't know that I could do. John walked away from all of it. Me becoming a Christian didn't cost me any money. It cost John his position in the music business. He walked away from it all with no job, no money. Who does that? This was a man serious about God, okay? But he was a rock and roller, and he was used to that lifestyle, and he was an entertainer as well. And over time, he probably thought that entertainment part of him was done, but it most certainly was not, because there was change coming that was exacerbated by what was happening in the 60s. Towards the end of 62, the Beatles hit in England. by the 22nd of November in that same year, JFK is assassinated. The Beatles come to the United States shortly thereafter, and musically, the world explodes with the British invasion. What does this have to do with Christianity? Well, in many ways, everything with what would happen within about another 5-6 short years with the Jesus People movement and music. It affected it. So I know I've talked a lot right there, but I we can go down this road a lot because this affected Chuck Smith. It affected Lonnie Frisbee, ultimately affected John Wimber. And music, the music that we started participating in by the time you got to the 70s was unthinkable. I never thought we could have guitars and drums in a service. John, last thing. Like I say, I'm a piano tuner. 50 years ago when I started tuning pianos, it was very rare for me to go into any church and not see an organ. I never went into a church 50 years ago and saw a set of drums. Now it's the opposite. Am I saying that's good or bad? No, that's not even the point. It's just how much things have changed.
Well, I've done several podcasts on the manipulation techniques of music because if you're a musician, you understand how this works. If you're not, you don't realize how much your mind can be swayed by the music. And the organ music, for example, this was really big in these tent revivals because you could set the pace.
Yes.
That pulsation that the organ gives in the I don't know what you call it inside of it, but that pulsation matches your heart rhythm, and you can bring people to this calm sense right before the service starts. That's one of the reasons why the organ was chosen. But the guitars... My family was really strong against guitars in church. In fact, my grandfather was against guitars in general. All of it comes back to the time period that you're talking about. Not many people realize this, and it's one of the things that just really excites me. Elvis Presley, he was so popular because he blended his bluesy style with the style from the black churches. He was hearing how the black churches and churches that were mimicking that style, how that could be applied to old, you know, honky-tonk music, country music, and he basically blended all this together and formed a, not unique, but a new brand of rock and roll. And the hip swaying, all of this, it came from that beat that really came from the black style singing, worship songs. Elvis Presley, for us in the cult, was number one Public Enemy. It wasn't just we could not listen to rock and roll, but Elvis specifically, we were actually forbidden as a weird rule. We could not even name our children Elvis as if we wanted to. But that was one of the rules that stuck. In 2012, I'm hearing sermons how we can't name our child Elvis. That's how bad they viewed Elvis.
Wow.
And it's because he was mixing this gospel style beat with rock and roll themes and music.
Yeah.
And they saw this as condemnation instead of inspiration. And then I heard him sing Only Believe, which was the theme song for our entire religion.
So, oh, my God. Oh, my God.
I'm hearing all these weird mixtures. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
But one of the other songs, so I'm going to get crazy excited. And like you said, that is the feeling. That's why people adopted this. I heard the Rolling Stones, the song Sympathy for the Devil. The first time I saw the music come into it was in one of the top charts. I can't remember what year. But when I saw that, instantly I hated it because of the title, Sympathy for the Devil.
Right.
And I listened to it, and I'll be honest, the first time I listened to it, my mind was still programmed. I thought, this is evil. These guys are worshiping Satan. All of the stuff that's in my head. But after I was able to critically think, it is one of the most amazing songs ever. It mentions all the things that you just mentioned, JFK, all of this timeline. But it's showing you how evil has swayed the history of the world. And it goes all the way back to where, you know, Satan from the beginning was swaying evil in the world and takes you all the way to the modern times. And then I heard this song. I don't know if you've heard it, but there's a song that also came out. I think this one was also before the Jesus movement. It's the, I think it's even called Prodigal Son. And it's basically this retelling of the Prodigal Son themes from the Bible. Okay. And in fact, the Rolling Stones had a cover on one of the, I think it was even one of the albums had a cover by some famous minister. So they were working hand in hand with religion to tell a story. And that story was more appealing because we're talking about a time when people are more religious.
Boy, you know, going back to John, again, he was an entertainer. When John came to Christ, he sold it all to follow Christ without the consideration that he would ever be an entertainer again. Well, he became an entertainer again. What you and I can't remember, John, have you been a worship leader or just in a worship setting as a worship on a worship band or something? What about you?
I played in the band in a few services. I've never been a leader.
Okay. I was a worship leader at Calvary Chapel for some years, and then I was on worship teams at Vineyard Anaheim. And so I'm aware of, you know, hey, people thought I was anointed. Why? I play a decent piano. I know the Bible halfway. I know about God. Knowing God and knowing about God, two different things. And so, you know, I saw what the emotions could do. I used to do a song when I led worship. I would do, and it was actually Elvis Presley did this song. Elvis Presley's How Great Thou Art. We did that, and I could crescendo on the piano and get the emotions flowing on that thing. And the thing about emotions is that here's what we know. Emotions go up, emotions go down. And the bigger picture, John, in all this, as you have done all this work with this historical institute, is seeing these periods of time with the spirit moving. Now, what spirit that is that's moving could be up for conjecture, okay? But I always want to look and see what's happened to those people 20 years after that died out. And I can tell you that I live here in Yorba Linda, where Vineyard was in its heyday. And I don't want to tell you that it's dead, but Vineyard Anaheim is no more. It's in ashes. Okay? It's done. It's over. And the people, I don't know, John, if you're aware of right now the fastest growing church in America. Now, this is kind of a trick question, but you'll get it. The fastest growing church in America right now is the church at home on the couch. It's people who have decided, you know, I'm saved. I'm done. I don't trust the church anymore. I'm done. And this is a sad commentary. People have given up. The emotions died out. And the emotions of what happened, and I was there in the middle of the whole Calvary Chapel. I loved the music that they did. And then, but to be honest with you, people don't know this, but Calvary Chapel in the day on a Sunday morning, if you went to Calvary Chapel on a Sunday morning, there were no worship bands. You did hymns. You sang "Oh, for a Thousand Tongues to Sing" and "Holy, Holy, Holy." But Calvary Chapel didn't have worship bands. That didn't happen until John Wimber and Calvary Chapel Yorba Linda started doing it in the late 70s. That was the only place, at least in California, that you had that. And it was wonderful. It was emotional. But guess what happened over time? We tired of that liturgy. And we needed a new drug. What was that new drug? Well, the Holy Spirit, healing, the Christian life. Oh, friends, we're going to die. John's gone. My dad's gone. I'm on the home stretch. I'm going to die. And I want God to heal me, but what I want him to heal is my heart. That's what I need, is I need this heart healed before I die, because I'm going to die. And so these emotions that we've lived off of won't last. Most of the Christian life is met with pain. That's been my experience, John.
Well, and that's just it. The pain, I think people were feeling the pain, and the music was a response to this, not just within the Christian circle. As you go outside of it, there was, I don't know if you've seen the movie or not, it was a great movie, and I'm drawing a blank on the name of it, but the movie that came out recently about Bob Dylan. Bob Dylan, his
like
music...
Like a Rolling Stone.
Like a Rolling Stone. His music is phenomenal. I don't so much like his voice, which is kind of funny,
right,
but
right.
The words, the music is great. Well, he was appealing to an audience that were hurting, and a lot of his lyrics, if you go back to the Bible themes, he is using themes from the Bible
constantly,
and then constantly adding modern words to it, right?
Constantly.
So he has basically primed a subset of America to be more receptive to this kind of music.
Yeah.
And to your point, the music style that came out during the Jesus movement, it would have been taboo had not all of these others paved the groundwork where people, the average person, could now come into church and recognize this as, this is the way that music is moving me. Whereas before, it was just the organ, it was slow, it was solemn. That kind of music, I hate to say it, while it is worship, it did not appeal to people who were broken and hurting. So you had people like Bob Dylan, you had the Rolling Stones, you had all of these groups of music genres that were coming together, bringing Bible themes and opening hearts that could then join the Jesus movement, and the music would appeal to them. So it was as though there were these stages of leading up to the Jesus movement that started way before the date that, what is it, late 1968, I think, that they credit the movement from starting. I say it started much before.
I agree. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, look, these worship, these debates on worship have been going on a long time. You have to understand that when you look through a hymnal, there's hymns you might look through there. Yeah, for instance, the song, What a Friend We Have in Jesus. You know that one, right? Who doesn't? When I say who doesn't, that's actually kind of a foolish question. My kids wouldn't know that song, because my kids weren't raised. We have a whole generation of kids now that have no idea about a church hymnal, have no idea about A Mighty Fortress Is Our God. But the point is that when What a Friend We Have in Jesus came out, or Leaning on the Everlasting Arms came out, that was scandalous in the church. There were people that said, that is not a hymn. We need Charles Wesley's Hark the Herald Angels Sing, or Luther's A Mighty Fortress Is Our God, with that kind of theology and that kind of style. And so the worship debates have been going on a long time. I think that the discouraging thing now, and we know this generally about the culture, we know the culture's changing. I think what's alarming to us is how quickly the culture is changing. What's going to happen in 2 years? I mean, it's just fascinating. I can remember saying to my wife a couple years ago, I'm so glad I won't be around to see this AI thing. Oh, wrong, 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 wrong. Now, for me now, as I'm slowing up, I'm still tuning pianos. But understand, John, these worship wars are going on. I am in... I'm tuned pianos at a lot of churches. I always tell pastors when I meet them that they have the third hardest job in the church. And I'm serious. The third hardest job is the pastor. The second hardest job is the pastor's wife. The hardest job in a church is music pastor. I am in churches now that are doing hip-hop music.
Wow.
Oh, no, I see it. Hip-hop music is in some of these churches. Now, depending on your age, if I talk to an older person, they will have a look that you just gave. Are you kidding me? I can't, And of course, then the other thing as well, if it ministers to them, okay? So the problem is that the church starts to fragment, and in regards to unity and what worship is, And so there's a part of me that misses the simplicity of the hymnal. And I loved so many of the songs that we did in the day that were good. There were some that weren't so good. There was some that theology was not good. And some of the, you guys, the Christian life is met with, we are just all muddling our way through life. People tend to view, like John Wimber, good or bad. You know, we have to, you know, I live here in Yorba Linda, kind of sidetracking a bit. Here in Yorba Linda is known because it's the birthplace of the 37th president of the United States, Richard Nixon. Okay. I am a docent at the library there. I lead tours. I've got one tomorrow morning. And what I say about Richard Nixon, and this is similar to John Wimber and so many leaders, Richard Nixon was like a layer cake. The first layer of Nixon was patriot. The next layer was mistrusting. The next layer is loving family man. The next layer is vindictive. He's all those things. You want to know what Nixon's like? Take a bite of that cake. He's all those things. And then I tell people, you know who else is like that? Me. So when we come to John Wimber, John's like a layer cake. Okay? People tend to think, and I've seen it from reading some of the comments on these podcasts, there are people that say, oh, Wimber was evil. That's fascinating to me, you know. John was, like me, a mixed bag, seeing if I can shorten the list of hypocrisies in my life before I die. That's my goal. So in all these movements, there's good people and there's people who are broken and leaking. And, you know, if the music ministers to people, that's great. But remember, people, the emotions will die. The emotions will die. And with Wimber and Vineyard, which led to this whole, because we started out this whole thing talking about what's happened now, has it's moved toward NAR, the New Apostolic Reformation, which blows my mind that anyone even could believe this is a real thing. But I guess, John, there's people that really believe in this New Apostolic. It's hilarious to me. I can't believe we've gone that far. I know I just covered a lot of material, but you and I started three podcasts ago talking about what led to NAR, and all this is a mixture that I'm sure the enemy used, and it's very sad that where it's led to is that the fastest growing church is the church on the couch. COVID obviously exacerbated that.
Have you ever wondered how the Pentecostal movement started, or how the progression of modern Pentecostalism transitioned through the Latter Rain, Charismatic, and other fringe movements into the New Apostolic Reformation? You can learn this and more on William Branham Historical Research's website, william-branham.org. On the books page of the website, you can find the compiled research of John Collins, Charles Paisley, Stephen Montgomery, John McKinnon, and others, with links to the paper, audio, and digital versions of each book. You can also find resources and documentation on various people and topics related to those movements. If you want to contribute to the cause, you can support the podcast by clicking the Contribute button at the top. And as always, be sure to like and subscribe to the audio or video version that you're listening to or watching. On behalf of William Branham Historical Research, we want to thank you for your support. So let's talk about some weird histories. I have studied music to no end, and I've studied all of the different things that you've mentioned to no end. But let's start in a weird place. So Yorba Linda is where John Wimber started this big movement. Yorba Linda, as you mentioned, is tied to Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon, as I have presented in multiple books and multiple videos, is strongly tied to this weird movement that I came out of. I've got photographs of William Branham sitting in a room where Richard Nixon is telling all the evangelical people that the battle is in the minds, and we need you ministers to get into their heads. If you paraphrase what he's saying, get into the people's heads, because exactly what you said, people are starting to deconvert and think they don't even need the religion. That was the whole speech that he gave.
Wow.
And then later, there's a, I've got a book, Weaponized Religion from Latter Rain to Colonia Dignidad, where Nixon is working with one of the more sinister compounds of the movement that I escaped that was working with the Nazis. It's a crazy history. I won't go there in this podcast. But now take that backwards in time. So you've got this movement which is using all means possible to convince the minds to believe whatever it is they're preaching from the evangelical side. Some of it good, some of it bad. They were using music as a tool long before Wimber. I've mentioned the organs, how the tent revivals would use these things. Well, whenever I learned that Elvis Presley was the one who really popularized the Only Believe song, I found out in history that it wasn't the first time it was popular. Back during the Christian and Missionary Alliance days, during its heyday, they wanted a way to assimilate parts of Africa. And the problem that they had is that the music from their style of worship was so simplified and had really gone astray from what the beautiful hymnal music that you're talking about was. They needed something that was more appealing to the tribes in Africa. And so what they did was they went to the growing and developing jazz industry, and they started to combine jazz themes and the jazz beat with Christian lyrics, and they created the song Only Believe. So it was actually made to try to persuade people of a different tribe, right? Go back further in time. William Branham's mentor, as we've mentioned, Roy Davis, was in the Klan, and he was the second in command of the Klan. Most people, when you say that word, they're thinking that this is just solely a group that hates black people.
Right.
That's not true. That's how Hollywood portrays it. It was actually a religious institution. It was a more to the point, it was a religious fraternal order. That fraternal order was to try to persuade people to believe the Christian themes and ideology that the Klan stood for. Well, Branham's mentor, the way that he persuaded people was through music. In fact, if you read any of the newspaper articles that talks about how he was bringing the music to the people would come for the big revival to hear him sing, hear his bands. He had these competition choirs that would sing with him. I found him hosting one of the quartet conventions out in Los Angeles. So not far from where the area you're talking about, he's bringing all the Christian musicians around in the Los Angeles area during the years that the California Klan was developing and rebirthing itself, 1944, 1945. And it wasn't long after that that the third wave of the Klan swept across the United States. Well, he's there, and the newspaper article mentions something really odd. I still don't know what to make of it. In the article where he's the MC, and all of these famous groups are coming in, names that I recognize, Blackwood Brothers, some other, I think Blackwood Brothers. These groups are coming to hear him because he was the MC due to the fact that he was in the original Stamps Quartet. If you believe the newspaper article, Stamps Quartet was J.D. Sumner and the Stamps who sang the pre-show for Elvis Presley.
Yeah.
So now this would have been a different group. The Stamps had different iterations, but all of this to link back, you can link all the way in circle, all the way back to Elvis Presley, which is weird. And I grew up listening to J.D. Sumner and the Stamps. He held the world's record in the, I think he's the only person in the Guinness Book of World Records for having the lowest vocal cords. He could go, I think it was 7 notes below the last key on the piano. So all of this weird history to say music was a tool. I found one article where Roy Davis, he was well known for all kinds of things, many of them sexual immorality. Newspapers labeled him a singer and a masher. And back during the day, a masher meant somebody who would go after your wife if you got them in the same room. So he was attracting people by music long before the Jesus movement ever started. And they were using songs that would have been taboo for their era. So when I look at the Jesus movement, and the big excitement is they brought excitement into the music. They brought modern style into the music in 1968. Well, you can almost go back every single decade in time, which I've partially did right here. You can find somebody else who is doing this because music was a tool. I can go back all the way to the early 1800s. Music is still a tool as far back in time as you go.
Something that maybe could encourage people and get the correct view about church music, which can be all over the map, I think the mistake would be to view that your church and the music is good, bad, whatever. When I am in tuning pianos, I was at a Presbyterian church recently, and I asked the pastor, hey, what's the music like, the worship like at your service? And he said to me, you know, Bruce, we have a blended service, which is code for nobody's really happy. Okay. And so he's trying to mix, you know, some praise music with guitars and then a hymn here and there. And of course, the tendency, if you're an older person who likes the hymns, that's the good stuff and the other stuff is the bad stuff. And so it's not that any of this stuff per se that is directed in praise towards God is bad. What's bad is what it can, especially when it comes to the emotional music, and that's what John Collins is talking about here, this emotional thing that we're talking about that can manipulate, that is what is potentially bad because it's what it's replaced. It's replaced the day in, day out grind of the Christian life, which is met with pain, which is met with disappointment, which is met with children being sick, with a marriage that's difficult. You're not going to solve those problems from singing an emotional worship song. It's not that it's bad. It's what this stuff can replace, and it's the shortcut that people think can get them into being spiritual. A mistake. Wrong. So don't view that this person's music is good, bad, right, or wrong. Just, there's no shortcuts when it comes to God. There just isn't. And that was probably my biggest frustration in being at Vineyard, is everybody wanted a shortcut. And John Wimber, who was an entertainer, in a sense, propagated often a shortcut. Just come up after these emotional songs, ask the Holy Spirit to come in you, walk out, and your issues will be dealt with. And John, you were in a cult. And I was in a different thing than you. I was fortunate to be in Vineyard compared to what you went through in Branham. So you went through a different thing. I can't imagine. Mine was an emotional thing that got us swept up. But I will say that 25 years later, after John Wimber died, it's a shell of what it was here in Yorba Linda, a shell.
I look at music a lot differently than a lot of other people who are my peers. Usually, my peers will look at the music as though it must be worship. It must be a certain style, a certain technique. If you stray from that technique, then you're really straying from the worship, and it's more about the music than the people. And there's all this weirdness about music. I don't look at it like this. Music is a vehicle. And a vehicle takes you wherever you turn the steering wheel to drive. Whenever I look at music, I don't look at it in such a way that it has to be contained in a box. Because of the exact problem that you mentioned, all of the older people, they're more comfortable with the older style songs because that's what they're familiar with. That makes right. them feel happy. That is taking the wheel and the vehicle and turning it that direction.
Yep.
Modern people, they're listening to hip hop stuff that I still can't force myself to listen to. Another funny story for another day. But it's because that's not what I'm familiar with. I like the complexity of music, and when I listen to hip hop, often it's like two or three notes and they're just banging the same notes on the piano. I like the really fine, complex music that invokes this thought process in your head. So, but to be fair, that's because I'm in control of the vehicle and it's taking me in the direction I want.
Oh yeah.
Not
so
the
true.
Direction that the young people want.
Right? So true. Yeah.
John Wimber, I'm going to say something that the people who are fans of John Wimber will like. He had control of the wheel, and he took it in the direction that was best suited to appease the larger number of people. He brought it back to this simple style that everybody wanted to get rid of all of this fear and this burden, all of the outside world pain that they're suffering with during that era. There were so many bad things happening. Well, he gave them an answer: come to us and there's peace. So he took the steering wheel and he drove it in the right direction. Does that mean that because he did that, that's the same right direction for today? Well, it's not going to apply to your younger crowd that wants to hear hip hop, right? You have to take the steering wheel and you have to be in control of the vehicle. For me, the biggest problem that I see, and this is not just in the destructive cults, I'm talking widespread, they're not controlling the vehicle according to what the people need, but it's more about what we as the church want to say that is our, either our marketing or our strategy or our technique or even simply the face of the organization. In other words, this vehicle is for us. It's not for you, the people. And for me, that's problematic. It needs, music is a vehicle that should invite people to enjoy, to like, to be inspired. And you have to drive the vehicle in the correct way.
Yeah. You know, we've also, in this age of options, my wife and I went out to dinner the other night to a restaurant that had a menu that was too big. And I ordered the chicken and later on wished I would have got the steak. Okay. There were so many options on this menu. This is kind of what's happened in the church today, is there are so many options. People go from Friday night going to see a movie and you want to see a good movie. And when you go to dinner, you want to have a good dinner. And then on Sunday, if you decide you're going to bulk up and take a shower and get to church, you want to go to a good church. You want good music. There's nothing worse, John, you know this. This is the part of you and I that are snobs. There's nothing worse than bad music. Whatever you do, do it well. Make it beautiful. And when I go, I want to hear good music. I also want to hear a good sermon. Now, the problem, sometimes I look back at my life, I would have rather heard John Wimber speak than heard our former pastor at the Yorba-Linda Friends Church, who was John's senior pastor. Why would I have rather heard John? Oh, he was far more entertaining. Okay. Was John's content good? Not always. Okay. So the problem is that there's so many options today. People can look for the flashy. I want someone that will entertain me from the pulpit. And, you know, this is part of the problem. You know, we've said some good things about John, but the problem with John is he would begin to say things. Some of you have seen that interview that he did with Peter Jennings. John Collins, I'm sure you've seen it, where John said, look, I gave up drugs for this thing. Have you seen that one?
Yeah.
You know, and you know for a fact, if John came back today, oh, he'd hate that he said that, you know. But by that point, John had gotten to the point where he felt he could say anything. And so when people are looking for churches, try to be careful just trying to find a pastor that'll tickle your ears and say wonderful things and hold your interest. You know, Christianity is marked with difficulty. If any man come after me, let him deny himself, pick up his cross. I used to say regularly, I just want to be like Jesus. And what I've learned over the years is I really don't. I only want to be like Jesus if it's easy. Don't insult me. Lord, make my life easy. And if it's easy, I want to be like Jesus. But most of the time, I really don't. And the Christian life is marked more with pain, and ultimately, we are going to die. And this is why the early Christians were just so incredible. You know, you would see people that would be taken and imprisoned, and many of them martyred, and they really believed that verse, blessed are you when men shall revile you and persecute you and say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceeding glad, for great is your reward in heaven. So the charismatic movement has some elements in it that are really good, but it has some elements in it, and John Wimber was a part of this, that propagated emotions through music, which I loved, and shortcuts, which I grew to loathe, because God never has given me a shortcut. I've wanted them. I wish I could have had some, but I've never gotten any of these shortcuts that other people say they've gotten. I believe it happens. You know, I kind of hit a point, John, where I don't want to be involved in any church that doesn't believe that God can speak to you. Okay? I also don't want to be involved in any church where a pastor or people in that church felt the need to tell me what God has told them. I don't want to be involved in that. I don't want to hear what you are saying. If God has told you something, brothers and sisters, oh, cherish it. Cherish it in your heart. But don't share it to others. It's for you, you alone.
I agree. And one of the problems we've talked about, not in the podcast with you, but one of the others that I did, one of the problems is that people who were at the wheel of this music vehicle, the moment they could get people to open up their minds, they would take them right to the person who's going to say, I am the anointed, God is speaking through me. And what they've done essentially is they've just opened up the mind like a box where anybody can dump anything into it, good or bad. And for me, that's wrong. Music has been abused, but it all comes back to who's at the wheel. If you have somebody at the wheel who wants to do good and not this New Apostolic Reformation, I need a mediator between God and man, so I'm going to drive this vehicle towards him.
Can I interrupt you real quick? You started that saying, to me that is wrong. Could I correct that? You don't need to say, to me that is wrong. John, that is wrong. Okay, that is wrong. It's not, that is wrong, period.
It really bothers me. In fact, that's part of the reason I do what I do, because I see all of these people and I see them like they're sitting there as an open box. No matter who is on the platform pouring their good or bad or evil into their heads, they just willingly open their boxes. And why do they do it? Some of it is the music, yes. There are other contributing factors, but it all starts with the music. Every service that you enter into, it always begins with this music as you're walking in, music yeah. as you're opening up to worship. If you get the wrong person who's leading that, how can you trust the direction that you're going to be taken to after?
You can't. You can't. Yeah. You can't. No. And this is where, you know, for the last 150 years, the church has lived more on emotion than substance. This isn't what Luther had in mind at all. I think Luther, by the time we hit the early 1800s, he would have rolled over in his grave. This wasn't what any of the reformers had in mind when they corrected from the Roman Catholic Church. This was not unrecognizable. And it's led people ultimately into being alone. You know, I gave that quote, I think, one other time, St. Cyprian. He has not God as father, who has not church and mother. I deeply believe in staying connected, if at all possible. There's people that go through seasons where they're trying to heal and reconnect to a church. But I hope for all those people, if you're one of those people out there, try to find a way to get connected to a church. I would encourage you to go to a church that's a little boring. I know that sounds, you know, and when I say a little boring, look for solid. Don't, I mean, if a man is too charismatic, be a little careful. You know, that can be a dangerous thing. Look where you're going. Look at the kids. See how the children behave. See how husbands and wives interact with one another. See how judgmental people tend to be. See if people can hold their tongues and be loving and kind. If the church has great music, look, I want to go to a church with great music, but you do want to be careful how manipulative it can be and how focused on Christ it can be. But I always encourage you, look for something maybe a little more boring than you're used to.
Well, that's good advice. I've never heard anybody advise me to go be bored and it be good advice. So thank you so much for doing this. I think it's smart.
I think it's smart. I think that's good counsel to look for something a little boring, okay? After what we've gone through these last 25 years, might be a good idea, you know?
Absolutely.
That doesn't sell, I know.
Absolutely. Well, if you've enjoyed our show and you want more information, you can check us out on the web. You can find us at william-branham.org. For more about the dark side of the New Apostolic Reformation, you can read Weaponized Religion, From Christian Identity to the NAR, available on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible.